This is the End User, episode 116 for Tuesday, November 27th. Not Quanto Quetzal, don't care. Hello and welcome to the End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm locative artist, Taylor Marr.
Locative artist? What does that even mean?
It means that I provide installation art that can only be seen with proprietary GPS technology. So you go somewhere, and then there's no art there, but then if you look through a proper GPS-assisted device, you can then see the art.
So it's like,
from William Gibson's pattern recognition.
So it's like art geocaching of sorts.
Yes, sort of like that.
An interesting one. Yeah, I need to get up on William Gibson. I really haven't read anything by him.
Get on it.
Yeah. So I will not read during the podcast because we we have plenty of news to talk about.
Will you be playing the Wii U during the podcast?
You know, I don't think I will, but at least it's released now, and we know what it is, and we know what it looks like, and all the reviews are out. And what do you think?
Well, I was looking forward to get my hands on one. My house went out to go get one. One of my roommates went to go pick one up, and it was gone. It was sold out.
Oh, so you couldn't even get one?
Yep, that was it.
Oh, that's funny. I wonder if that is a testament to the amount of stock they had or if it's actually that popular.
I think it's definitely a combination of the two. It's not a product of the stock only in that particular store. It's my understanding that most of the devices available at launch did sell. So if they had more than 400,000 available at launch, they probably would have sold those too.
Yeah, I'd have to imagine it. Do you think this is going to take off like the Wii took off in the same way? Like this is the first of the next generation consoles. Do you think it's going to take off in the same way the Wii took off, or is it?
I don't think so. It's such a more complicated platform than the Wii. It doesn't have, you know, people aren't saying about the Wii U, like, oh, this is great, this is new, I'm not usually interested in video games, but I want this. So it's going to have a smaller fan base than the Wii at first. Although if it's a successful platform, then it may catch on.
Yeah, so this is $299 for the basic Wii U. So that's, you know, I'm sure it'll get cheaper over time. That's what was so great about the Wii was that it was so cheap they just kind of saturated the market. And I feel like that may not be the case here, especially with the tablet controller. You know, this is not going to be quite the same throwaway price that the Wii became to be. I mean, you get a Wii for $150 when it was selling a lot.
Yeah, well, that did take a few years, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're at the very beginning of this product cycle, so we'll kind of see how people adopt it. Now, the other thing is that with the Wii, I mean, it more or less collects dust over there in my TV cabinet. You know, I don't really use it a lot. We got all kinds of games and even a Wii Fit and Guitar Hero and all this hardware, and then it just kind of, it was neat for a little while, and then we just kind of let it languish. So do you get the feeling?
This is where the Wii U may be able to improve on the Wii. Lots of people bought the Wii, they used it at parties, they used it for Wii Fit maybe for a while, they played the games that came with it, and then most people just kind of let it go. But the main question for the Wii U is not whether it can emulate that behavior, but whether people are going to use this as their main platform over the Xbox 360, which is aging at this point, or the PlayStation 3, which doesn't have the same kind of technology that the Wii U does. I mean, if you look at a PlayStation 3 controller versus a Wii U controller, you'd pick the Wii U every time.
Yeah, you mean the whole tablet thing? I can't wait to play Madden on this and get to select my plays on this personal screen, just like the old Dreamcast.
Right. But I do think that they're trying a bit too hard to be a device for everyone when it seems to me that their best bet is to, if they can go after hardcore gamers and you know, collect a significant portion of the market share, then they can make a lot of money that way.
And I think what will ultimately make or break the Wii U is not the Wii U itself. It's going to be the other next generation consoles as they come out. So the next Xbox and the next PlayStation. When those things come out, I think we'll have a better context for the market that the Wii U sits in. So that'll be very interesting to see what happens when those things come out.
Sure, I totally agree. But it's worth noting that Nintendo, for the past several cycles of consoles, has been the first to market with the next generation. And they sort of bridge the gap between the old and the new and provide a relatively cheap option as well. So it's cheap, it's accessible, and it's first.
And it's first. Yeah, so we'll see how it does. They've sold, as of right now, they've sold 1.2 million devices. So that's not so bad, huh? We'll see how it fares going into the holiday season.
Yeah, I imagine I will get my hands on one rather soon. Looking forward to reporting back about it.
Okay, cool. Well, when you do that, come back to the podcast and let us know what it's like.
Right. Okay, so do you remember a few weeks ago we talked about the release of the Google Nexus 4 and the Nexus 10? And we talked about the 4 for a while. In fact, Ars Technica gave a preliminary review that said they called it two-thirds of a great phone, and that missing third was LTE.
Yeah, because it was a little disappointing.
So it only had 3G cellular capability. So a few people are starting to get their hands on them now and finding that if you take it apart, there's an LTE chip built in, and it's not an announced feature. So people were really surprised about this. Rampant speculation occurred on the internet as to whether you could activate LTE.
Wait, Taylor, let's be clear. Rampant speculation never happens on the internet.
Fair enough. This must have been bulletin boards.
Right, yeah. So I dialed into my local BBS last night and talked about the Nexus 4 for a while.
Anyway, so enough of this bulletin board speculation was happening that LG actually commented on it. They said, well, listen, we just didn't think that LTE was appropriate. We don't have the right battery power, but LTE was part of the built-in chipset, the Snapdragon chipset that we ordered for the phone. So yeah, it's there, but it uses a lot of power. It's not a useful feature for this particular phone, so we turned it off. Now, the latest part of this story is that a blogger in Canada, that is Brian Klug, writing for a non-tech, found that he could, in fact, activate LTE without any hardware or software hacking on his Nexus 4.
Yeah, so you just have to dial into the service menu and enable it or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's all that it is. But then you also have to have the correct LTE band in your area.
And Canada happens to have the right band. The United States doesn't have the right band.
Yeah, most of the United States does not have the correct band.
So that's kind of funny. So they have a radio. They have a radio that is not enabled that you can use in Canada by accident, and it's really easy to turn it on. That's actually kind of neat.
Yeah, it is. It is really neat. But and it's an excellent example of the flexibility of the Android platform. I mean, with an iPhone or a Windows Phone device, you would never have this kind of capability built in. There would never be this Easter egg.
Yeah, or at least it would be a lot less likely. There was a good workaround for Verizon blocks tethering on Windows Phone, and if you dial into a service menu and change one particular setting, then you can actually enable the tethering, albeit violating the terms of service of your contract, I'm sure. But those secret service menus are kind of a fun little hack. So if you wanted to use LTE in Canada on the Nexus 4, you have to dial *#4636#*#. It's like a
which you can do on any Android phone if you're curious to see what the menu looks like.
Right, so that's pretty neat.
Right, yeah, so I thought that was really cool. Cool enough to notice and talk about. But I don't have a Nexus 4. You don't have a Nexus 4. Probably no one listening to us has a Nexus 4. But if this is a make or break sort of situation, then maybe go out and get one. I don't know. I can't say.
Yeah, I don't know. The Nexus devices have always been kind of a reference, you know, the reference for developers to use. That's the stock Android, and it's a little different than the mass market phones that Samsung makes. It's a little bit different, but I don't know. If I'm going to Canada, I'll be assured that I would turn this on in a heartbeat.
Okay, well, our last bit of top news this week is that the CEO of Intel, Paul Otellini, he's been CEO for 8 years. He's been with the company for almost 40, and he's only the sixth CEO in the history of Intel. He is retiring at the end of the year, or no, in May 2013.
Right, so I'm sure we've talked about him in the past and what he's been up to at Intel. We're not going to see any serious changes coming from this, right? This is just kind of a changing of the guard. Like, this isn't the Scott Forstall and Stephen Sinofsky kind of outing, right? This is just
Okay,
kind
but
of.
taken together with Scott Forstall, with Stephen Sinofsky, with Marissa Mayer, and other examples, could we consider this at this point to be 2012 a sea change in the technology industry at large?
Yeah, I think
Yes,
looking
no,
at it.
the correct answer is yes. There's really no more that needs to be said. It is a sea change. That's it.
Looking at it from the executive perspective, and they drive what happens in the company. Yes, absolutely. I do wonder how much of the technology is going to change. And I think that the answer to that is not a whole lot.
Well, yes, in the sense that it's always changing, it will continue to change
Yeah.
at a similar rate.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Right. There
And
will be no acceleration or jerk, but perhaps a difference in velocity.
I would also like to ask the headline writer of the article that we're passing along to step down as well, because this is terrible. The headline is Intel CEO Ottolina will cash in his chips. So
Yeah, he should write for the Register. That's a classic Register headline.
yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, anyways, it's Ars Technica, so they can get away with one. All
Right.
right, with that, let's turn on our afterburners, unless you have any objections, Mr. Marr.
No objections. I'm braced. I'm locked down. I'm ready to go. Let's turn them on.
So Microsoft made a little mistake in their enabling of Media Center in Windows 8, and you can actually get an official Windows 8 product key if you enable Media Center. And that allows you to install Windows 8 and basically pirate it without paying anything, and then you get the Media Center feature, and you get a full version of Windows 8. Windows 8. Whoops.
Okay, that's pretty sweet. So Microsoft is working on an update to Windows Phone 8. They're going to call it Apollo Plus, and it's just a rumor at this point, but it's going to bring all the new features to make Windows Phone 8 sort of a more full-featured platform.
Yeah, so it looks like they rushed this out a little bit up front, and they're going to add some of the more minor features in this little update so that they could push the OS out there and get the devices out there, and then they could modify this thing in place and add the smaller feature. Like VPN support is one of those things that Android and iOS have had forever, and Windows Phone just does not have it, including Windows Phone 8, until this rumored update hits. So when that actually happens, we'll cover it.
Excellent. Now we've covered this bug for iPhones and iPads that has happened before. Well, specifically for iPhones, because you have to have phone number associated with your iOS account. But the problem is, if you buy an iPhone, you use iMessage, and you then switch your phone to a non-iPhone device, then someone will be able to continue getting messages on that old phone that were not directed at them. They were directed at your old number, even though it's not on the phone anymore. So, Apple has finally fixed that bug in iOS 6.
And Linux Mint 14 has been released, so they've got a couple interesting things going on here. There's two different desktop window managers that you can use. One's called Cinnamon, which is based on GNOME 3, and one is called Mate, which is based on GNOME 2 for a little less frills in the interface. So I've always liked Linux Mint as a Linux distribution. That said, I've kind of moved over to Fedora for all of those purposes, because it's just, they use GNOME 3, and I don't know, it just seems a little more modern. But I'll have to give this Linux Mint with the Cinnamon shell a try.
Not Quantel Quetzal, Taylor don't care. Trademark. All right, so Nokia is rebranding their map services by calling them HERE, in all caps, HERE. And they are starting off with this by introducing an iOS app. So I guess with Nokia Windows 8 phones, they're going to be built in. It's going to be the same Maps app that they were planning on having, but they're just going to call it Here. The Here iOS Maps app is currently available, and I tried it, and it's okay. It'll probably get better over time, which is the same thing that everyone's saying about Apple Maps.
Yeah, that's about right. Now, why in the world would they call it here? That's going to make it very impossible to talk about.
I don't speak Finnish, so I don't know the
Yeah,
genesis of it.
maybe we're missing something.
Maybe.
So, Android 4.2 for the Galaxy Nexus is rolling out and is available to download now as of November 13th. So, if you've got a Galaxy Nexus or a Nexus 7, check your updates. You've got some goodies to download.
Yeah, the real story to me here, though, is that 4.2 has been available for 2 weeks already and is only available for two devices on the entire Nexus line. Seems a little bit ridiculous to me. Like, they should be able to roll out to all the Nexuses virtually simultaneously, but, well, I'm sure it's coming very soon. But even if you do upgrade to 4.2, either through the official Google channels or through CyanogenMod. I don't know if they have that available yet. You should be wary of the new People app because it is conspicuously missing the entire month of December.
What is that bug?
It just December doesn't exist. They left out December.
That is
So if you were
truly
born in
bizarre.
December, too bad. If you are doing something next month, too bad. If you were doing something a year from now, too bad.
Yeah,
I'm
that
sure
is.
they'll fix it as soon as they can, but it was a pretty glaring oversight. I would call this a major minor bug.
That is very bizarre.
Yep. And finally, Google Fiber, which we've been talking about for so long, is as of November 13th, live in Kansas City. I call this our news in nerd jealousy of the week.
That's
Google
about right.
Fiber is live in Kansas City, although they're not getting true gigabit Ethernet. They are getting on the order of 700 megabits per second.
Oh, well, that's a shame. They won't get gigabit. I'm not so jealous anymore. I'll take my 15 megabit connection to the bank, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that gigabit is possible if just gigabit Ethernet cables probably have some latency.
Well, at some point you figure you're waiting on the servers. If you have enough bandwidth like that,
Yeah, exactly.
your bandwidth is not the problem. It's the server's bandwidth that becomes the problem.
Right.
All right, and with that, let's turn off the afterburners, and let's get into the end user stories. We've only got a couple of them this week.
But they're good ones.
I also wanted to mention that in some of the newer Windows 8 machines, they're embedding the product keys in the BIOS of the machine. Sorry, I skipped over that one. So that's kind of interesting. That opens up a world of user friendliness that just wasn't there before. You know, they would previously put it on a sticker and put the sticker on the machine, thus making the machine ugly looking or something like that. So it's kind of interesting just to note that some manufacturers are going to start embedding the product key into the BIOS. I think that's a good step forward.
Yeah, I never knew how much I hated stickers on computers until I bought one without any.
Yeah. I always, whenever I get a new machine, I always remove all the stickers I possibly can.
All right, so yeah, that's pretty cool.
Let's move on to the YouTube story.
Okay. Yeah, this is pretty great, particularly for people who have either Google TVs or any kind of computer hooked up to their TV, whether it's a dedicated HTPC running Windows 7 Media Center or Windows
Yes.
8 or Linux, or whether it's just an Apple computer hooked up to the TV, which lots of people have.
Yeah, so what they've rolled out here is that they basically took the YouTube app on Android and added a button to it so that you can throw a YouTube video up to a Google TV. And like you said, it also works with just the mobile app. I've had experience using that on my Windows 7 Media Center, like you mentioned. So they're adding it, kind of making it official. I mean, you could go to this website and then control the interface with your phone, and, you know, it worked. But they're kind of making it official by adding it to the official Android YouTube app. So that seems pretty neat. And it works really well. Now, I haven't used this because I don't have a Google TV. I haven't used this specific combination. But from my experience with using it with my home theater PC, it's pretty nice. You know, it's like AirPlay, but you're not throwing the video around locally. You're kind of throwing a link to the TV, and then it plays it from YouTube. So that seems like a really good way of doing things.
Yeah, it's definitely much better than the current solution for YouTube on the Apple TV with iOS. If with my iPhone and my Apple TV right now, using the official YouTube app, I have to turn mirroring on the TV and then scroll through so everyone can see the interface of the Apple TV or of the YouTube app as I look for the video and then I play it. And the worst part is that the YouTube app is not yet updated to the 16:9 format of my new iPhone, so it's letterboxed, or in the case of a letterboxed video, it's double letterboxed on the TV, and there's no better way to watch YouTube videos. It's actually quite frustrating.
Ouch! Yeah, that doesn't sound too great.
Right. So I'm hoping that there are two big updates coming to the official YouTube app for iOS. One being, please support the iPhone 5. And two being, please allow AirPlay mirroring. And three, if you could do that thing that you're doing for Google TV, that'd be swell too.
Yeah, I'm. They'll probably add it. Have you tried to use the mobile website for it?
Yes, and we've had a tip a couple months ago on the end user. Remember when the official YouTube app came out, people were complaining it's such a pain in the ass. Here is how you can circumvent the YouTube app and use the mobile app.
Right.
But it's still an extra step to use the mobile app instead of the official app.
Yeah, this notion of pairing your device with some device that's on your TV, I think is a good one. We'll see that idea stick around for a little bit, I do believe.
I'm in complete agreement with you on that one.
Yeah, and then you don't have to worry about the bandwidth of the AirPlay pipe or whatever it is. You know, I guess it's over Wi-Fi. And you don't have to worry about the processing speed of the device that you're sending video from. You know, you just tell it where to look and it looks up there and, hey, there's a HD YouTube video, no problem. That seems to make a little more sense to me than doing all of this mirroring.
True. The future, can't wait for it.
Right. All right, well, you've put an interesting story in the show notes here, the last of the end user stories. We've got some speed record being set. What's going on here?
Well, this is my green tech story for the week, Chris. Now, I talk about wind power a lot, but usually we're talking about turbines. Remember when we talked about the inflatable wind turbine that is hoisted up on cables and helium into the stratosphere and like captures the jet stream wind?
Yeah, and I think my favorite green tech story of the year was the building designed to funnel wind to drive its own power source.
Right, yeah, the building that was thousands of feet tall. Yeah,
that was cool.
That was really cool. And then there was the one that the guy designed that could be strung across canyons on wires. But this week, I'm talking about the oldest form of wind power, and that would be sailing.
Yeah, that's harnessing wind power directly instead of converting it into some other form of energy.
So in case you thought that sailing was an old and dying form of wind energy harvesting, I am here to tell you otherwise, because speed records are still being set on the world's fastest sailboats, which really look more like airplane missile rocket ships than sailboats.
Yeah, they're missiles that happen to travel along the water, not
Now, as a matter of fact, sailboats. This new record-breaking sailboat is called the Sail Rocket 2. Skimming along a bay in Africa, it managed to reach 59.23 knots. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with nautical terms, but that's actually over 68 miles per hour. That was an average speed over 500 meters. So it wasn't instantaneous. They really sustained that using ideal wind conditions.
So that's about highway driving speed. So you could, with no fuel consumption whatsoever, drive this boat at highway speed. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. I mean, there are a lot of speedboats you can't drive at highway speed.
Yeah, so if you'd like to see this missile boat, you'll have to go to our show notes and we'll have a link to it. And you can just see exactly how weird this thing is. It's very
It's
funny
also worth
looking.
pointing out that at the time they hit that that speed, the wind speed was actually only about 25 knots. So they were going 2.5 times the speed of the actual wind that was pushing them.
Yeah, really cool. And there's a YouTube video too of actual thing happening.
Right.
All right, well, let's move away from the Sail Rocket 2. Let's get into our tip of the week. And as usual, you've got the tip of the week. What's this?
Well, as usual, this one comes from Lifehacker,
Yeah.
and it's about backups. Now, we're both geeks, and we both spend a lot of time telling people that their backup solutions should be better. When we started this show, Chris, you admitted that you didn't really have a good backup solution, but it's gotten a lot better now. One common IT rule of thumb is that you should have a 3-T-3-2-1 backup rule, and that's three copies of anything that you really care about. And you should have it in two different formats. You know, they shouldn't all be just on hard drives. And one, at least one, should be off-site.
Right, so you can, and this is what I do currently, and it's not quite adequate for this, but I've got, for stuff that I really care about, I've got a copy on my home server, and I've got a copy up in SkyDrive. And so that one copy is off-site because it's in the cloud. And then I've got my local backup, and I've got the original file on my desktop or whatever computer it happens to be on. So I'm really close to this, but I'm not quite there yet. But it's a whole lot better than what I used to do, which was basically nothing.
Yes, that's great.
So,
So I have for my smaller documents, I use Dropbox. That's
right.
my cloud storage. For my media collection, I have iTunes Match. So that's my cloud for the rest of it. And then I have my solid state drive on my computer, and then my time capsule, which is downstairs. And then I have an offsite drive at my parents' house.
See, that's what I
So
really need to do.
I have cloud plus offsite.
What would be even more ideal is to have all the backups get run on my home server and then back that up to the cloud somewhere, perhaps with SkyDrive, perhaps with something else, CrashPlan, something like that. And then also have a backup of my home server that I take off site every once in a while. That's the next step for me, I think.
Yeah, that would be great.
But anyway, you know, there's one thing I don't really care about the media as much because, well, A, I've got it backed up in Amazon and Google Music. So I've got a lot of
Oh-ho.
all of the music stuff backed up there. That's not so bad. And then, but if you really care about the content that you've created, that's where it's really important. Things that you cannot get back. Something you've created, some document, some code you've written, or something like that. You really ought to follow this rule of thumb for that kind of thing. And it doesn't take nearly as much space to back up the stuff that you've created because they're typically very small, at least compared to video rips and MP3s and that. So, yeah, if you don't have to get perfect with this, but as close as you can get to this, the better off you'll be in case of a disaster.
Right. Well, I think the takeaway here is that if you've been following our advice and you've been backing up, that's great. You're not done.
Yeah, no, you're never really. You can always upgrade things around, and you're never really done.
You're never done. So have fun.
All right, so I've got a another app pick of the week, or I guess of the last 2 weeks since we missed a podcast last week. I kind of want to come around to Windows 8 apps that are in the Windows Store that, you know, how you can use these things to your advantage in ways that.
What do you
You
mean,
know,
come around, Chris? All of
what?
your app picks of the week have been Windows 8 apps.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, for example, on the desktop, if you're going to use instant messaging, I would go with Pigeon or Trillian or something like that. And I think as we move.
ADM is the universally recommended pick for Mac.
For Mac, yeah. If I'm on Mac, that's what I'm using. But I think as we move forward, it makes sense to start to move into the new interface and kind of see how that works out. And I looked around the store for some instant messaging applications, and IM Plus was the winner of my adventure there. So if you want to use a Windows Store app or for the apps formerly known as Metro for instant messaging, that would be the pick. So I'd be curious if people were using that and Pigeon on the desktop of Windows 8 to see which one stuck. And IM Plus has stuck for me so far. So, you know, I'm always going to keep my eyes open. But so that's my app pick of the week, IM Plus.
Yeah. And that's definitely one of the first apps you want to pick up, you know, when you upgrade to a new OS.
Yeah, definitely so. So now we've got Google Reader covered and instant messaging covered. So those are pretty basic functionality that is absolutely essential in moving to some new OS and new interface. And so the app picture on Windows 8 is starting to come together, and those are two good ones.
Okay, yeah, pretty cool. I won't be trying it because I don't have Windows 8, but maybe in the future.
Yeah, you can stick with Adium. It's also really good.
Yeah. Now, should we move on to our kicker?
We shall. Let's get into the last story of the day.
Okay, I'll start with a question. Chris, do you know what Google Chrome Experiments is?
Experiments? No, I haven't heard of them.
It is a virtual gallery of interactive projects that use open technologies. Google is putting these things together, and so they are specifically engineered for Chrome. And our kicker this week is a Google Chrome experiment called Google Galaxy. And what it is basically Google Maps for the entire galaxy. So you can kind of zoom through space, check out the Milky Way, and explore some things. It's actually the official name of it is 100,000 stars, which is the amount of stars included in this galactic map.
Yeah, this is really cool. And I'm looking at chromeexperiments.com as well. There's a bunch of really neat stuff here.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. There are lots of other cool experiments, but I was really enjoying playing around earlier today with this 100,000 stars experiment app thing. And you should check it out, and you should watch the video. You should get the other Google Chrome experiments. I don't know. If you like space, just do it.
Yeah, and how long before we get the universe covered here? We've got our galaxy, but that we can't stop there, can we?
Yes, you're absolutely right. We can't stop there, but it will be infinity until we get the entire universe covered.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we still haven't seen all of it.
Definitely so. So cool. That's almost another tip of the week.
The ability to explore our galaxy in your browser, or the fact that we haven't seen all of our universe yet?
The former.
Okay, yes. Not really a tip of the week, just more of a time waster.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
If you're a professional astronomer, you probably have a better app.
Yeah, you probably have a better way of doing these things.
Right.
All right, well, it's time for us to get out of here on that note, as that was the kicker. Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you, how would they do so?
Well, as I've mentioned before, smoke signals are probably not the best way. Yelling is fairly effective at close range. Otherwise, you could always try my Twitter account. And on Twitter, I am at TaylorPhone.
Okay, and I, more simply, am at Chris Hale Barnes. So give us a tweet. Let us know what you think about the show. If you have any suggestions to make it better, let us know. We're all ears. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find the show notes at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. And the DMZ has a few other podcasts. You should have a listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast, which has a new episode out now. You can also send us some feedback. Our email is theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can ping us both on Twitter. Together, we are at theenduser. You can join us in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.